Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, Pete Sweeney, joined once again by my esteemed deputy editor. He's celebrating a birthday. Happy birthday, John Dixon. A few days late. Well, belated birthday.
It was Sunday, yeah, but okay. Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome. Did you have a nice celebration? Did you get any Chiefs-related gift?
Actually, I didn't get any Chiefs-related stuff this year. The overalls that I'm wearing, I got those.
Are those Chiefs
birthday.
Overalls?
No, they're just Levi's. These are literally the only Levi's I can wear at my current age and girth. So
I understand. I understand that. They're industrial. That's nice.
That's right.
I've never dabbled in overalls, if you could believe that, but I'm not opposed, right? You know, for the right set of circumstances, maybe I would do it. I'd imagine I'd look okay. I think I could pull them off.
I don't think I've had a pair on since I was in high school. I for a while, I went through a phase where I wore overalls in high school, which was a completely different time than now. Let's make that clear.
Do you feel invigorated? Do you feel the fountain of youth in the overalls?
Yeah, a little bit.
Good.
Well, that's good. I had a little trouble getting the straps over my shoulders, though. That's an age-related issue right there. So,
well, we can guarantee that John is going to bring that young, lively, overall energy for the next 60 minutes or so as we have the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show on this show. We'll give you the latest news. We'll go over Andy Reid for Monday. We'll give you our world-famous marinated takeaways, the best Chiefs thing we heard all week. If you like the Editor's Show, if you like the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, please leave us a rating and a review. John, let's go to the news. And the first thing we have to talk about is this idea that Whitney Mercilus is a name that has emerged as a possibility for the Kansas City Chiefs. The longtime NFL defensive lineman has been released by the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans are now in full rebuild mode. That's hard for veteran players to have to go through, to know there's no shot at the playoffs. We are just giving up on this season. We are trying to get the best picks we possibly can heading into the future. So Mercilus becomes this, in a sense, Terrell Suggs type of player for the Chiefs. Yeah. Already been connected to the Chiefs via Aaron Wilson. Apparently there's mutual interest to sides. This could get done here on Transaction Tuesday. Pulling the curtain back, we're recording about 10 after 10 right now. Has not happened yet. Do you think the Chiefs will maybe make this move, John?
I think there's a good chance of it, yeah. I mean, I think there's a better chance now that he's actually been released, as I understand it. You know, there's been some confusion about that. Originally, they said they were going to release him, and then there was talk they were going to have him on the trade market before they released him. But now the reports are saying that he's going to be cut on today's transaction report. So it's just a question of the Chiefs getting him at basically a veteran minimum salary, and probably knowing the Chiefs, a veteran salary benefit contract where they actually get a little cap relief on top of the money that they're paying him. And he gets a $137,000 bonus on that kind of a contract, which is good for the player. So that's what I would expect to see happen. If the Chiefs sign him, he'll get that kind of a contract. And it'll be an inexpensive one, as you say, just like Terrell Suggs, who I believe also had a veteran.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is I wonder what it means for Chris Jones and his wrist. He's missed the last two games with the wrist injury. Are the Chiefs worried? I mean, they are getting to the bottom of the barrel here with Joshua Kando, the rookie, on the IR. Damone Harris has now used both of his practice squad elevations. So they're getting to the depths of this thing. I wonder at the age of 31 what a player like Whitney Mercilus has left. He was a 2012 first-round pick, number 26 overall, has spent his whole year with the Texans. Now, we just talked about how the Texans season is going. There's not a lot of motivation down there in Houston to necessarily go balls to the wall against these opposing offensive linemen. I pulled up on PFF, profootballfocus.com, the pressures right now. And let me read you off the Chiefs. Chris Jones at 15, Mike Dana at 13, Jaron Reed at 11. This number surprised me here. Frank Clark in limited games at 10. Very close to the guys who have played more games than him. Alex Okafor at 9, Turk Wharton at 7, and then you would get to Colin Saunders at 5, and then Whitney Mercilus in Houston, 5. So while it's a hot name, and I wonder if the Chiefs would be interested, again, I think you got to take into account the motivation factor here. I think that is very real. The output in Houston has not been tremendously great. Now you put him on a better defensive line, those numbers go up. But it's, let's say, let's give him 5 more pressures, right? I mean, you're talking about 10. Is that worth it for the Chiefs? Some would say yes. Some say he's a veteran and he'll turn it on here. I'm in between on this one. I think it's a hot name that we like, but I just wonder if it's worth it. If it's a low risk, high reward, as you kind of alluded to, John, then maybe I land on why not.
Well, I think the key thing to this might be giving them the option to put Chris Jones back where he's most effective. I think that's the big upside to making this deal would be the ability to move Jones back to the inside on a more regular basis. I think it's fair to say the defensive end thing hasn't worked out quite like they thought it would. I mean, we all thought it was going to make Jones a monster this season. We thought that the ability of the Chiefs to move him around all over the line would improve the play of the line. That really hasn't played out like we anticipated. Surely the Chiefs know that. And so I think this might be a reason for them to do it, is it gives them more opportunities, a better chance to move Chris Jones back to where he's most effective. That to me would be the big upside.
Right. Or maybe you're continuing to move him around and he's more inside. Cause I don't think, and that was right, what right, is lost right. in this whole position change. Like, he didn't move to just defensive end permanently. It basically became, if you want to say, a 2-to-1 where it was more end than inside. Whereas, go ahead.
Yeah, the numbers don't really work out that way. I was kind of surprised by that, because the way Spagnuolo was talking in the offseason, when we would ask him about this, he would say, sure. Well, you know, he's still going to move inside on third down. Well, that suggested it was going to be where last year he was on the outside one play out of three, that this year he'd be on the inside one play out of three. But it's actually been more like one play in 10 that he's been on the inside. If you look up his detailed snap counts on PFF, he's actually been on the inside very little this season. It's mostly been on the outside.
You know, the preseason look has been different than what we've seen in the regular season, because in the preseason, it looked like it was going to be a very clear point. And maybe that's because of a lack of the edge and the fact that Frank Clark missed a handful of games. And that's why you see him more on what would be the edge. I have it pulled up right here. So he's had 14 snaps at the right end position and 26 at the left end position. But he's been moving all about when it comes to the different tackle positions, 11 left interior, 9 right interior. He's even lined up as a linebacker in a sense. They've been using him in a variety of different ways, but I think you bring another able body into the mix that allows you to do more and maybe even mix it right. up a little bit more. But we do still have the question, John, of when we actually may see Chris Jones even back. He's just been shut down. I'd imagine the Chiefs are trying to get that wrist right. We don't know the severity of it. They've been a little bit, I think, coy when it comes to giving any true updates on where Jones is at, why they decided to shut him down out of practice. So I think it remains to be seen if we even see him back in the mix this week. I did ask Andy Reid about this last week, and he said that Jones was close. And what is close? Is it close as in, okay, he'll be back on the field Wednesday, or close as in, you know, by the end of October, you may see him? So same thing with Travarius Ward, who has missed the last handful of games. There is a silver lining in the Ward thing, because I think the sooner Ward gets back in the lineup, the better for the Chiefs. He's a reliable player. But Rashad Fenton has been a very nice surprise when it comes to coming into the lineup. And right now you can make a case that he looks like the Chiefs' best cornerback. Period. And L'Jarius Sneed looks great, but I just think Fenton has come on really strong here. That was never to be expected.
Right. I completely agree with that. He's been a very nice surprise. But, you know, maybe we shouldn't be surprised. You know, he took a game or two of snaps at the outside corner last season when Bashaud Breeland was out after Snead was injured. And he looked very good then. But then when Snead was back and Bashaud was back, then he reverted back to that slot corner role. The Chiefs didn't forget that he looked good as an outside corner, and the last two games they've had him in there as the starter, and he's done well. So I agree. This was kind of a surprise, although maybe it shouldn't have. It's not like we hadn't seen this happen before.
Update on Charvarius Ward. Remember, he's been out since the week two game. It's actually been a lot of weeks now. We're going into week seven, and it's because he suffered a setback, that injury where not this past Friday, but the Friday before, Sam Madison essentially confirmed that he re-injured the quad, I believe it is, in practice and couldn't go again. And so if they try and start this process on Wednesday, if I'm guessing here, and we will see with our Wednesday injury report that we'll post to arrowheadpride.com, I would bet both of these players are limited on Wednesday. But again, we need to see that in the reports. The other injuries to note, terrible. We can comment on this quickly, John. Tight end Jody Fortson, what a terrible end to what was one of the better stories of the Chiefs in what has been an up and down year.
Yeah, this is really bad. I feel so bad for this guy. He's worked so hard, taken multiple shots at, making the team, and actually, you know, went to trying to get in the team on the roster in a different position, which you don't see all that often. And he made it work and has been a very effective player for the Chiefs. I'm going to speak about this a little bit more later. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And I feel so bad for the guy, but I also think he's going to be back. And I'll get to that a little later, but I think the Chiefs are going to make an effort to bring him back because he's really been an effective player.
Yeah, I hate it because Fortson really had to earn it. Like, this was a legitimate player who had to show something in training camp in the preseason to get it done. He's been at it for a while. He finally broke through. He had two touchdowns. You know how hard it is for a player to have two touchdowns when they're a regular part of the lineup? Just ask DeMarcus Robinson about that. Jody Fortson is getting like five plays a week or whatever it was, and he was able to get in the end zone twice. Now he gets to try to come back. What I hate there, go to Juan Thornhill, who had another injury. What I hate there is that players sometimes don't return to form, and I don't think Fortson has a ton of time, you know? And so if he's on the margin coming into next year's training camp, and we're going to be rooting for him, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's got to really respond to what is a terrible injury pretty much next year, because I don't know if his opportunity would extend to another year on the practice squad potentially, and then maybe he's good in 2023. I don't hope this scenario for him, but I've just seen too many times where players on the fringe like this have an uphill battle to begin with, and if their body is not right, I hope that this isn't the case. Jody Fortson is keeping himself in good spirits. Patrick Mahomes kind of confirmed that. Long road ahead. Again, we'll be covering this and we'll be rooting for him. I hope that he does indeed have a spot on the 90-man roster once the season is.
Well, I think we also need to be careful here about comparing it too directly to Thornhill's situation, because Thornhill's situation was in the last game of this.
Right.
And this is fairly early in the season, so that gives him a little extra time to rehab from this compared to Thornhill.
I think what I mean, John, is what I'm saying is, like, a lot of these players with these major knee injuries, like Thornhill said, in a sense, regardless of when it happened, I didn't really feel right till a year changed. So, like, that's what I mean. So this time next year in October might be when is that going to be too late, in a sense? And that's where I get concerned. I hope that's not the case. And I hope he has a quick recovery, and I hope he has the explosion that we saw, the athleticism that we saw prior to. But it's just, man, what a tough situation when it comes to a kid who, like, really, really put work in, really, really earned it, and it's just been tough.
I'll have to check this to be sure, but I think one of the interesting things about this is that he played in six games this year, which gives him an accrued season.
Good.
And if I'm not mistaken, it is his first accrued season, which means that the Chiefs would have two more seasons under which he would be when he would be under their control. He may have won from the year he was on injured reserve, but I don't think so, because I think he won on IR before the season began. So I think this is his first. So the Chiefs will have two for sure. And then maybe another season on top of that as a restricted rights free agent. So, you know, the Chiefs, they have an opportunity to have this guy for a while if they really want him. And I think they will.
Well, there you go. We'll see. And Fortson, again, we'll look for in the 2022 offseason. The other injuries of note, Anthony Hitchens with an elbow. We haven't really seen anything about that quite yet. He was due to have an MRI after leaving the game and being ruled out, which is never a good sign. There were reports that he hyperextended his elbow potentially, but again, we'll have to wait for an update from Chiefs head coach Andy Reid on Wednesday. Fullback Mike Burton injured his left pec. That's a little bit less serious. He plays about 4 or 5 offensive plays per game. I feel like that position could be something that a tight end could do if need be. I don't know if the Chiefs go out and get another fullback, but back to the Anthony Hitchens, I think that's the bigger one. What'll be interesting about this and what will probably be maddening to fans is the Chiefs really quickly went to Ben Neiman as the green dot or the communicator in this defense. And I don't know how much trust they would have necessarily in a Willie Gay or Nick Bolton to do that as much as Hitchens has the opportunity to. So if Hitchens has to miss a game or two or whatever it is, a couple games, then I think you're going to see Neiman, you know, I think Neiman is an able backup for a few games. The problem that you see with these players like Neiman and Sorensen is they've been put in these sometimes starting positions, and that's where you can see them really struggle. And so I think Neiman could hold down the fort. I'm glad to see that Willie Gay is getting back into this mix.
Well, that's something else that I'm going to address a little later in the show, another preview there. But that has really been the problem. It's not that these players don't have roles that they can fulfill adequately. It's that the Chiefs have been forced into using them in places where they can't perform adequately. That's certainly been true of Sorensen. And I think that Neiman probably is best used as a Mike linebacker, which makes him the backup on this. But because the Chiefs were so short linebacker, they didn't have a lot of choices but to put Neiman out there in ways that he wasn't ideal. So I think this is where Neiman makes the most sense. I'm not saying that he's, you know, the greatest player ever, but, you know, he's a reserve player. And that's the role he's going to be taking, filling in for Hitchens here. And I think he'll be able to do fairly well at it.
Marinated takeaways coming up in segment 3. Another piece of news, offensive lineman Kyle Long. As of Monday, after week 6, or Tuesday maybe, he is now eligible to come off of what is the PUP list. I don't know if the Chiefs will do it. I asked Andy Reid on Monday, if you want to go back to From the Podium and watch how a reporter is shut down by a head coach, you can go and listen to that. And no real information on the Kyle Long front. I know a lot of you have asked. The team has not really said anything, and I'm not sure he's even been with the team. So I don't know on that one. And even if he was activated, I don't see him necessarily getting a position right away in the starting offensive line, but it would provide the Chiefs some good depth, I think, to get him back in the mix. But we don't really know on that front at this
point. Well, whose place would he take? Maybe right tackle. You know, if Remmers maybe wasn't playing well, you know, maybe that. Right. But, you know, I don't see him taking Joe Tooney's place or Trey Smith's place, certainly.
Right.
That would really be the only place I could see him playing is on the outside. So, yeah, we'll have to see. It's interesting that Reid wanted to shut you down on that question.
I know. He was better on my second question. Again, you can go from the podium if you want to see how this thing unfolded. All right. Chiefs 31, Washington 13. John, you dug into the snap counts. We have it up at arrowheadpride.com right now. What are the big takeaways?
Well, you know, I think the thing that people were most interested in was how many snaps that Josh Gordon would get. And it was 11 for this game, just slightly more than he had the week before. On a percentage basis, it was 10% last week and 13% this week. So an unexpected misuse, if you will, of a player who maybe could have been productive in this game. You know, Andy Reid had said that he expected to get him in for about 20 snaps the week before, and we all took that to mean that he was going to try and get him in for 20 snaps this week. Well, that didn't happen. And, you know, the week before, Reid said it was because they were behind and he got pushed out of the way because of the sets they were running and they were plays that he didn't know. Well, obviously, that take didn't work, at least in the second half. In the game. So I'm not quite sure what's going on with him. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs don't want to put him out there unless he's got the playbook fully down. Again, I've said this many times now. I think this is a postseason move. I think that the Chiefs are just moving him along slowly so that he'll be ready for the postseason run, where teams don't have much tape on what how the Chiefs have used him. So that could be what's going on in the backs of their minds there. We'll just have to see what happens over the next few games with Gordon.
Yeah, I don't know either. I disagree a little bit. I don't know if it's a postseason move. I think the Chiefs want to get him to be the number two receiver as quick as possible. I just don't think it's happening. We're having our lead film analyst, Ron Kopp, dig onto what was 12 plays. Ron had noted to me, the great Ron Kopp, about obstruction, by the way. You can get that on Mondays. Got to get the tease in there. But yeah. Ron had mentioned to me that he missed a block on a quick wide receiver screen. Andy Reid basically came out and said, we want to have 20 plays for this guy. It wasn't really any hurry up situation. And then he played 8 or 9 less than that. So the reason why we're digging into that film is because we want to see if there were any clear mistakes by Gordon that basically made Andy Reid say, look, we have to wait another week with him. He's a liability. He's a liability right now with the team. John, any other takeaways from you besides the Gordon?
Well, I think that one of the other issues that people were waiting to learn about was whether when Juan Thornhill became the starter, if Dan Sorensen would be still getting a lot more snaps than we wanted to see. But in fact, they basically swapped positions. Looking at the snap counts, it looks very much like they just traded places on the field. Thornhill was out there for 100% of snaps, just like Sorensen has been all this season as the starting safety. And Sorensen's snaps were roughly in line with the kind of snaps Thornhill was getting as the third safety. So, you know, if you're worried about Sorensen being the deep coverage safety, I think you can put that aside. I think they're going to be using him now in the way where he can be most effective as the third safety up in the box, where he actually can play fairly well. I think everybody's in agreement that his big weakness is being a deep coverage safety, and I don't think we're going to see that because certainly Thornhill
Sorensen
did all right.
And this is what is lost. Sorensen and Spots is a good player. I know we're going to get to your marinated takeaway. Neiman and Spots is a good player, and I think that's what you kind of take away from the snap counts, and the team finally said, look, we get it. He can't be a starter. We have to try something, and I mean, I think that Fenton and Gay and Thornhill were a breath of fresh air for the defense, as was Tyrann Mathieu's tirade. It seemed like they played way better after that. They shut out the Washington football team in the second half. Granted, you're talking about Taylor Heinicke, still an NFL offense, still have Terry McLaurin on that team, who's a world-class wide receiver, and they were able to kind of shut him down too. All right, so that is the news. That is the snap count takeaways. When we come back, we'll dig into Andy Reid and his Monday afternoon noon press conference. Stay with us on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon. We have given you the news. We have gone through John Dixon's snap counts. By the way, you can use full snap counts at arrowheadpride.com. Now let's get into Andy Reid and what he said on his Zoom conference call from Monday afternoon. And the big thing I think that you could take away is the Kansas City Chiefs finally tapped into that complementary football.
Just that we need to build on it, and we will. And then especially teams, I also thought, did a good job there. So, which also becomes important. But listen, if you can get the offense and defense playing well, then you see what you got to see that second half. I mean, it, and it's important that we keep growing there, and that we do eliminate the turnovers and we create turnovers, and you know, all of those things that you're supposed to do to win football games, and then have a solid special teams unit. So but that's what we're striving for, and I know our guys are hungry to do that, and so we'll keep working at it.
So you saw two things on Sunday, right? You saw the Chiefs turn the football over. You saw the defense giving up big plays. You saw the lowly Washington football team with a 13-10 win. But then you saw the Chiefs really clean up the turnovers and the defense step up. So I think it's pretty clear what Andy Reid is saying. When the offense is playing well, it's easier for the defense to play well and vice versa.
Yeah, well, that's been a problem for the team all season. You know, that the offense is not playing in a way that benefits the defense and vice versa. This complementary football thing has been a problem. And on Sunday afternoon, particularly in the second half, we saw those units playing in a way that complemented each other. And the result was a 21-0 run. So that's a good thing.
The Chiefs won this game 31-13. So let's make that very clear before we get into our next point. This was also a game in which Patrick Mahomes had the worst play of his career. He also had one of the better plays of his career, but it'll never see the light of day in a box score because there were penalties on the play. But Patrick Mahomes had what was a horrible interception, and here was Chiefs head coach Andy Reid.
He was trying to make something happen, and there was a fumbled snap. He picks it up, and now it's one of those deals. Kelce kind of flashed there for a second, so I would put it in that category.
Reid also had a quick point about turnovers in general, as the Chiefs now lead the league in turnovers with 14.
Yeah, so two separate things, but yeah, I think those are fatal flaws. They kill drives, obviously, if you're not on the end of recovering a fumble. At times, I mentioned this last week, at times guys will press and try to do too much. And then you do that. And that's a problem. If you're concentrating on not doing the fumbling part as opposed to practicing it all week and making it a habit of covering the ball in traffic or making the right throws, or all the things that have kind of happened, looking the ball all the way into the tuck, all those things. If you don't make those a habit and you're concentrating them on game day, then there's a problem. That can be a problem. So we just go back and we try to focus in on the positive part of catching the football, and those fundamentals.
So, yeah, I think this was just a classic case of what we've been talking about for weeks, John, with Patrick Mahomes simply trying to do too much. And this was an awful decision and one you really don't see him make a lot. But this is what kind of led me to writing what I wrote in the Rapid Reaction. Became rock bottom for the Chiefs, because it seemed like anything that could go wrong was going wrong heading into that halftime locker room.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you about this. I know that there are some fans and probably some talking heads who are concerned about trying to make Mahomes into something that he isn't. But you just can't have an NFL quarterback that makes those kinds of decisions. It Right. just doesn't make any sense. And even if you have the ability to make plays sometimes in those situations, as Mahomes has shown he has the ability to do in many of them, it's still a low percentage play to try and make a throw to somebody when you're being dragged down to the ground.
Right.
And he's just going to have to learn to take the sack. And in this particular situation on Sunday, the result of the play would have been a fourth down inside field goal, right?
Right.
And, it's on Mahomes to be thinking about that before he takes the snap from center. Do I absolutely have to avoid? There are some situations where a sack is the thing he absolutely has to avoid. This was not one of them. And if he had taken the time to think that through before taking the snap, maybe we would have seen a different outcome there and a tie score at the end of the first half.
Yeah, it's tough because I look at the time of the game it was, and we look at the ending now and the way it ended, and you don't think about this, and this can get away from you. But, I mean, the Chiefs we're down 13-10, and Mahomes might have said to himself, is this about to be 20-10? Do I have to continue putting up touchdowns? And I think you saw a little bit of that. And I think it was good in a sense to get to that point where it seemed dire, and then to have the Chiefs respond the way they did. More on that in Marinated Takeaways coming up in the next segment. Mike Remmers, we talked a lot about Juan Thornhill, but Mike Remmers replaced Lucas Niang at right tackle in this game. Here was Chiefs head coach Andy Reid on Mike Remmers.
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. He was solid in there. And I thought he really held his own. That defensive line, I have a lot of respect for it. I mean, there are a lot of first-round picks on that defensive line, and they can rev it up and play pretty good. And I've seen it when we were looking at tape, you could see it. And then when we were out there, you could see their speed and athletic ability. So I thought our guys did a pretty good job with that. Mike was, I thought, for his first outing, I thought he did a real nice job.
As Andy Reid noted, there are four first-rounders on the starting defensive line for the Washington football team in Young, Payne, Allen, and Montez Sweat. I would be stunned if Lucas Niang starts at right tackle next week, John. I'd go that far.
Well, you know, I was the one who was saying all along that Remmers would get the start at the beginning of the season, and it didn't play out that way. And I think so. I can't say I'm surprised that the Chiefs have eventually come home to mama, so to speak, on putting a veteran at right tackle. And I agree with you. I think there's a pretty good chance that Remmers will be back there in this next game. You know, it's not like Niang has been bad.
Right.
But he's been a typical rookie, which is not what we've seen from Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. These guys have been playing at a top pro level as rookies. Niang hasn't been, but that's not really a knock on him. You know, the man is still essentially a rookie. He's a second-year rookie, for lack of a better term, and you're going to see this sometimes. It's astonishing that the Chiefs have only had one of three have this kind of a season. So that's a good thing. It's bad for him personally, of course, but I think he's going to be somebody who will be a quality player down the line. He just more seasoning.
I would agree. I think he will play a role for the Chiefs in the future. We get on Mike Remmers for the horrible job that he did at left tackle. He's now done this in two Super Bowls, one for the Panthers and one for the Chiefs. He's a good right tackle. I mean, that's just it is what it is. And if this can buy Lucas Niang some more time to work at it, and then you have Remmers shoring it up, who knows how Kyle Long fits into that picture in the coming weeks. But I mean, you look at last year and the injuries that the Chiefs have and Mitch Schwartz going down, Remmers shored up that position. It was only when the Chiefs were down to their 10th offensive lineman and he had to go play left tackle that it wasn't the right situation, wasn't the right position. And so I don't hate this move. I think, again, a lot of these lineup changes, I've been saying it the whole time this show, were a breath of fresh air. And I actually thought that was one of them. Continuing on, and we had discussed Josh Gordon in our snap counts, but Andy Reid was asked about those snap counts, given the fact that he had said that Gordon would play around 20 snaps or wanted that for him.
Yeah, it didn't work out that way, but we'll keep bringing him along. You know, I think he's just starting to get comfortable with this whole thing. We had him in for a couple few plays. I don't know what it totaled out, but he'll be fine. We just keep working through everything.
So to me, this was, and this is why I made the point I did in the last segment. This was a head coach that in a way was defending a player who's new to the system and maybe dialing back the expectations. You don't see Chiefs head coach Andy Reid make a mistake like this a lot in the media, where he sort of promises a certain thing and then has to like walk it back. This is why he's so careful about this type of thing.
Right.
And that was what I kind of gathered from this quote about Josh Gordon. In a similar sense to maybe how Lucas Niang can help you in the distant future, I think Gordon is going to help you in what could be the short-term future. You're right, John. It might take a couple more weeks, but this is someone who is still developing and learning the Chiefs-specific West Coast playbook.
Yeah, I think that's a real good point about Andy Reid, too. He is not somebody who wants to commit himself to anything for any reason. And in retrospect, his words about Gordon last week were kind of a departure for him. I hadn't really thought about that up until this moment, but I think you're exactly right. I think he went someplace he wouldn't normally go and say, oh yeah, we're going to get in those 20 steps next week, which he didn't say directly, but he implied it pretty clearly.
More sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in a sense, this is Reid kind of apologizing the way Reid would do in such a situation. So I think you've got a great point there.
This is Chiefs head coach Andy Reid. If you want to listen to the full press conference, and I'll say it again, It's a textbook 101 Pete Sweeney shutdown on the Kyle Long question. Go back to From the Podium and check that out. When we come back, our world famous marinated takeaways from Chiefs in Washington. Plus, we'll give you the best Chiefs thing this week. It's the best Chiefs thing we've seen all week. This is the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I'm gonna let this marinate.
You know, let that one marinate, and then we can circle back.
Adapt, react, readapt.
It takes time.
It takes years.
That's the takeaway.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, it is week 7, which means we are a third of the way there, John. Now that we have 18 weeks in the NFL season, see that quick math that I did there? 66.666666666% of the season left for the Chiefs, including the Thanksgiving bye week. Thank you to the NFL for that here in Kansas City. All right, let's get into our marinated takeaways from the Chiefs' 31-13 win over Washington. John, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit more about Jody Fortson. Now, he just had one catch in this game, which means that he's totaled 5 catches for 47 yards.
An excellent catch.
Year. Right. Yes, an excellent catch, which we shouldn't go without mentioning. But I got to wondering after the game how often a player so early in his career gets 2 touchdowns on so few targets. And you know what? It doesn't happen very often. Wow. I went to our friends at Pro Football Reference and their Stathead football application and looked to see how many times a player in 5 games, their first 5 games of their career, had 4 targets and 2 touchdowns at least. And it turns out there have been 2. Hmm. One of them, Jody Fortson, here in 2021. The last time it happened was with Matt Spaeth for the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2007. Now, this only covers the years from 1992 on because those are the years where they have target data. If right. you look at just receiver 4 receptions over the course of the first 5 games of a player's career, there's quite a few more. But this idea that a guy comes into the league and in his first 5 games doesn't drop a catch and scores 2 touchdowns, that's a pretty big deal. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're going to see the Chiefs work hard to bring him back next season. And there's one other one, too, that you kind of have to dig a little bit to find. But going to Pro Football Focus, if you bring up all the tight ends and their run and pass blocking grades this season, you don't see the grade for Jody Fortson because he's only had 13 run blocking snaps. So he doesn't show up under the minimum qualifiers. But if you, say, turn off the minimum qualifier, his grade of 85.8 for run blocking is one of the top 2 in the league this year. So not only has he been very effective as a receiver, he's also been, granted, small sample size, a very effective run blocker. And in pass blocking, only 3 snaps, he has a grade of 70.6. Fortson has really done a great job. I think the Chiefs are going to work hard to bring him back.
Yeah, I do feel like he had that tight end 2 ceiling. I mean, I think by the time the playoffs rolled around, he might have been the quote-unquote tight end 2 of this football team. You know that Travis Kelce had a lot of support with him, and Fortson appreciated that, and he just fit right in. And wow, it remains just a tough part of the 2021 season. That'll hopefully be one of the better stories of the 2022 season.
You know, it occurred to me, people talk about Demetrius Harris as being the last successful tight end 2, and even Harris was less than ideal in the eyes of many fans because his catch rate was so low, you know,
right.
And he has that nickname we all know that's based on his name. And Fortson is, you know, like Harris in that you can bring him in cold and he'll perform for you. And Harris had that capability. He dropped a lot of balls, no question about that. But he also had big touchdowns in big moments in big games. And I think that that's what we're going to see from Fortson when he's playing behind Travis Kelce.
A good point by you, John, though incomplete. I'll just say that. Okay, on to my first Marinetta takeaway. I think Sunday was a nice reminder that when Patrick Mahomes looks like Magic Mahomes, it just makes everything easier. And we hadn't seen that in a little bit. It just had been struggle. When Patrick Mahomes is playing like he did in the second half and hitting those plays like the one to Tyreek Hill, where he's running to the numbers and hitting Tyreek Hill on the other hash and throwing across his body with a perfect pass somehow, it really doesn't matter about what everyone else is doing. And it's been a while this season since the Chiefs have seen that version of Patrick Mahomes. And I just felt like this was a nice reminder. Yes, these do indeed have the best player in the world. Yes, he is a human. He can struggle for a couple of weeks. But when he turns it back on, man, good luck. It doesn't really matter what the other 252 guys are doing.
Yeah, this was so nice to see Mahomes in his full glory in the second half of this game. I mean, there were times this season that we saw that for short periods. There were a couple of games where he was really good throughout the game, but there have been no games where there weren't problems. So this was the biggest stretch we'd seen all season where Mahomes was just Mahomes for a significant period of time.
Well, how long
have
we
seen the second half of the game?
And I get it's Washington. It's a struggling defense.
Sure.
Mahomes and the Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and just how it typically it's seamless with this trio. And now you've had weeks where one has been good. You had weeks where the other has been good. But this was a return to the Mahomes, Kelce, Hill triplet. And that's why you saw the 21-0 blowout, which is what the Chiefs should do against the Washington football team. And it truly was, and it's a football cliche, but this game truly was a game of two halves.
Yeah, I completely agree there. But of course, we'd already used our tale of two halves for other games this season, so we couldn't throw that out there in a journalistic sense. We tried. But
a tale of a pair of two quarters apiece. That's the Bruce Arians version of that. All right, John, you can go at your next point.
I want to stick talking about Mahomes a little bit. You know, it's become a thing among the national talking heads and the national writers to talk about Mahomes regressing this year for the first time since he became the Chiefs starter. And for sure, eight interceptions is really bad. He's thrown eight picks. But I'd like to point out something here about those eight interceptions. Now, I can think of three of them that were made while he was being sacked. And we've already addressed in this show how that's a problem and how it's an easy problem for him to fix and well within his capabilities, his mental capabilities. Everybody would agree that Mahomes is capable of learning how to do that. So that takes off three of them. I can think of three, and I think there were more, that bounced off a receiver's hands. Well, those are going to happen to any quarterback. But it's not Mahomes that it happened to. These are receivers who didn't catch balls that hit them in the hands and that they should have brought in. So I'm just not really sure that Mahomes has regressed. This is about things Mahomes can fix. This is about things that have nothing to do with Mahomes. And I bet you could make an argument that there hasn't been a single targeted throw this season where Mahomes has simply made a bad throw and was intercepted as a result.
Yeah, I would agree. And just to add on your point, I mean, it's hard to say to a top five wide receiver in the league be better, but
yeah,
and he knows it. You can't drop the passes that Hill has dropped and allow it to pop up and go into the, it's such a killer. And in a sense, the Chiefs were lucky they were playing Washington, but when you make those mistakes against the Buffalo Bills, for example, they're going to pounce, right?
Like right.
Now that the Tennessee Titans have knocked off the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football, to me, the Titans become a team that you can't make a mistake like that against. They seem to be playing really good football, and this has suddenly become a really interesting AFC game. 2019 title rematch. There are players on that team that were there in 2019. They're going to really want this. You're going to Tennessee to play the Titans. And so I just think it gets more interesting in the little things that maybe you can make in the first half against Washington. You do that against Tennessee. They hand it off to Derrick Henry. He runs 90 yards down the field, and all of a sudden it's 17-0 Titans away. So I think the little things you're seeing getting cleaned up, Mahomes, I think, understands that, and I think the Chiefs are confident that he can clean those things up. But it also extends to receivers and just making catches. And if Josh Gordon's not ready, maybe you wait a little bit, for example. You know, some of the little things that make you a clean, more efficient, well-oiled football machine that can be in games with what are considered now some of these AFC contenders. One point I wanted to make, John, was about the play of Darrell Williams and just what it does for the offense. And Darrell didn't have necessarily a good game statistically. This is one of those classic games where you look at the box score and you're like, oh, was Darrell even that good? I think he was excellent in the sense of setting the tone, especially early in the early downs and early in drives, and saying, okay, he can pick up 3 or 4 yards. And then when the opposing defenses have to stop the run or pay attention to a guy that really is on one and is gashing you a little bit early in downs, then that does open things up for the pass game. And I think you saw a little bit of that. And good for Darrell to get the 2 touchdowns. So he had this whole comment during the week about how his mom cried when he wasn't drafted. He was a really good LSU player. And, you know, when you're playing for LSU on a good football team, that is the high of the highs. And to go from that to being undrafted and then to seeing LeSean McCoy come in and Le'Veon Bell come in, and then they go and draft a running back. And even after that, we got rid of Damian Williams, and to finally get that opportunity and really in his first outing, and he'll have a couple chances here, but make the most of it, I thought was good. I also think Jerick McKinnon needs more touches. That play, I tweeted it out. You can go back and look at my media and my tweets, twitter.com, PG Sween. Got a first down with 4 guys in front of him. I don't know how he even was able to do it, but yeah, I feel like McKinnon, the 1-2 punch to me, seems like it should be a thing for the Chiefs. I would like to see the ball in the hands of McKinnon a little bit more, you know, so long as it doesn't necessarily take Darrell Williams out of a rhythm, but a little bit more of a split, I think, could benefit this team. And here's my last point on this marinated take. Just because I think we're complimenting Darrell and Jerick in their games and what they were able to do with their opportunities doesn't necessarily mean Clyde is bad. I think we get sometimes lost in the idea that, like, okay, man, Darrell looked really good and so did Jerick. Why did we draft Clyde? We drafted Clyde, or the Chiefs drafted Clyde, because his upside and ceiling is better. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. He was actually on the come up, where he had back-to-back 100-yard rushing games, was looking really good. So I think that's just worth saying and reminding people, like, just because Darrell had a good game doesn't mean that Clyde pick was suddenly bad, in a sense, because the Chiefs have not even come close to reaching what the upside that Clyde is and Clyde can provide, in my mind. And Darrell has a lower ceiling, as great of a game as he had.
Well, I agree with everything you said, and I actually missed a point when we were talking about snap counts earlier in the show that I should have mentioned, and that is that the Chiefs gave Darrell his snaps and Edwards-Helaire's snaps. He had a snap count above 70%, which we haven't seen from Edwards-Helaire since week 1 of the season. Mm. And basically, they let him have his own snaps, and he had Clyde Edwards-Helaire's snaps. Jerick McKinnon had exactly the same number of snaps he'd had the week before on a percentage basis. So he had plenty of opportunities to show us things. He was basically the bell cow, which we haven't seen in very many Chiefs games this year. It's mostly been a running back by committee. Right.
I made this point over the years, and I'll just go back to it. Like, I was here, and I had an opportunity to cover, like, the Jamal Charles Chiefs, and after that, the Kareem Hunt Chiefs, and now the Clyde Chiefs. Sometimes Andy Reid operates better when it's the Spencer Ware, Charvarius Ward Chiefs, when it's the Darrell Williams Chiefs, when people aren't checking the box score and looking at how many touches running back X has, and they're more of a compliment to the offense.
Yeah.
Because Andy Reid wants to pass first, and that's his offense, right? But when these guys are more compliments to the offense than supposed to be the third guy, like we talked a lot about going into this year, partly my fault, I did it, as Clyde Edwards-Helaire being the third target on this team. And then you're looking at his targets and his receptions, and you're like, what, still not involved in the passing game? Why? You know, Andy Reid's running backs operate best when they're not expected to touch the ball all that much. And you see them shine in that sense. And that's why we got that combined 1,000-yard season for Spencer Ware and Charvarius Ward, and why no one was really worried about how many touches they got when they were doing that. So it's just a caveat, I think, of an Andy team.
You know, I'd like to make one point that's expansion of what you were saying here, and that relates to Edwards-Helaire being selected in the first round. I saw a lot of chatter over the weekend about how great Darrell Williams looked, and I agree with you. He did look great. He looked better than the box score showed. I completely agree with that. But I saw a lot of commentary from fans, talking heads, et cetera, about how Williams was better than Edwards-Helaire. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he showed he can do the job effectively. I think he absolutely showed that when he was on the field on Sunday. But I also agree with your point before that Edwards-Helaire had come off of a couple of games where he looked fantastic. And I think people who are saying that that Edwards-Helaire isn't the player the Chiefs need in this position and that they should have Darrell Williams start in his place are still pissed off because he was drafted in the first round. I think if you take that expectation of the first round off Edwards-Helaire, everybody would think he was fantastic.
Same thing for Hardman in the second round, and I think that kills him too. If Hardman was drafted a little bit later, I don't know if fans would have so much disdain for him. The fan doghouse, though, it's right now it's worked for them, though. They've gotten basically Ben Neiman replaced, and they've gotten Daniel Sorensen replaced, so I think you're going to see more of this. Clyde had fallen into that a little bit. What'll be interesting, and I will think that this is interesting too, and it'll be something to follow, is if Darrell in these next two opportunities, two plus potentially, is able to rip off 100 and change yard efforts.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be really interesting when Clyde gets back in the.
Agreed. I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Any other marinated takeaways from you, John?
Yeah. I just wanted to make a point about Ben Neiman, and this is an expansion of what we were talking about before, of using these players who have been used incorrectly because of circumstances where they don't do very well. And Sorensen was not a guy that could be effective as the starting safety who's on the field for 100% of the snaps.
Right.
But and Neiman has the same problem. He's been used as a starting player when he really isn't at that level. I mean, and no offense to either of these guys. These are both blue-collar players who have earned their positions to be reserve players on the Chiefs team, and we should be glad to have them. We just can't expect them to do those jobs. You know, they're just not going to be top-level players. They just simply aren't those kinds of players. I will point out that after Anthony Hitchens went out in the second quarter, we had Ben Neiman at the Mike linebacker position, which he does not normally play. This isn't a position that Neiman has normally played this season when we've had all these bad things happen with Ben Neiman. And in the second half, when Ben Neiman has the green dot on his helmet and is calling the plays and getting everybody lined up in the right place, the things that Anthony Hitchens does, the Washington football team was 1-for-4 on third downs. They gained 76 yards. They had 19 plays on 4 drives, ending with a missed field goal, a punt, and an interception. Now, I'm sorry. I know that it's not just Ben Neiman who was out there, but I think that those numbers show that the defense was effective with Neiman wearing the green dot, and he was basically being used in the place where he can be most effective, and that's to be as Anthony Hitchens' backup. And let's hope that Hitchens is able to get back on the field. But until then, I think Neiman's going to be able to hold the job down pretty well.
You can contact the ultimate Neiman advocate, Arrow Headphones, on Twitter. So just direct all your commentary toward John there. My last takeaway is just looking forward. I'm juiced for this Chiefs-Titans game. I know that a lot of fans probably were watching last night and saying, oh, no, the Titans are coming. I'm like, no, this is now a game that matters a lot more in the sense of the Titans are legit. Yeah. Everyone was considering the Bills either the number one or number two team in the league. They just beat them on the national stage. And Josh Allen had the ball 4th and 1, and they stuffed him. I was very, very impressed with the Tennessee Titans on this Monday Night Football game. And this is suddenly a very important AFC game because Titans showed that they're capable of beating the Chiefs. And the Chiefs now have an opportunity to say, look, we're back, way before playing the Green Bay Packers, which I thought I was looking past the Titans. I thought the Bills would beat them and cover the spread last night. Did not happen. The Tennessee Titans kind of re-announced themselves in the picture of the AFC. So, don't ever take my betting advice if I ever try to pass that along.
All right. And you can't be looking past games. If you say the team can't look past a game, you can't do it either. So let's just be clear on that. So,
yeah, I would like to look past the entire regular season and just get to the postseason, but can't fast forward like Adam Sandler's click. All right, let's get into the best Chiefs thing we have seen all week. Steve, pull it up, baby.
Watch this. Would you say suction cups with one hand, and he traps it on the offensive line. Is that Lucas? Cornelius Lucas, and then is able to haul it in. So what I would say about Spagnuolo, he said this group comes to work every week no matter the result. He just wants them to have a 60-minute game where they can feel the fruits of their labor.
No, unbelievable. Turk Wharton, Turk Wharton is one of my low-key favorite defensive players to cover on the Kansas City Chiefs. This guy has just been grinding. Local, Missouri, small school guy, comes out of nowhere, and he just puts his nose to the grindstone. The coaching staff loves him. Brendan Daly has nothing but good things to say, and you could see the slow build. This guy pinned a ball against the offensive lineman Lucas's head on the other side of his body, one of the best defensive players that we've seen in Kansas City in a really long time. And I think in the upset, the fans being upset about Jaron Reed, we've lost the come up. And I think the slow but sure development of Turk Wharton, this is becoming a real player for the Chiefs. And I'm happy and made this the best Chiefs thing I saw all week, because I think this gives him an opportunity to put him in the spotlight, which maybe we don't shine enough on a player who really, in a similar sense to Darrell Williams, had no business being in this position and being a role player for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he's making the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And it makes me wish that there was a way you could look up passes intercepted while engaged with a blocker. I mean, I'm not sure I've ever seen that before, where a defensive lineman has made an interception while he's continuing to be engaged with a blocker in front of him. I don't think I've ever seen a play like that before. There can't be very many of them in NFL history. I'm sure someone will think of one that they've seen, but it was a new one on me. And I completely agree that Wharton has no business being where he is, but I'm certainly glad the Chiefs recognized his talent, and that he's and not only when he was playing at Missouri S&T, but also when he came to Kansas City and they recognized immediately that he was a player that they could use, that they've given him that opportunity. So yeah, totally love that. And I also want to point out too that yet again a snap count thing that I should have mentioned before. You know, Derek Nnadi was the starter on Sunday, but Wharton had more snaps. The two of them were rotating on the line. That's what the snap counts indicate. The two of their percentages add up to about 100%. So it appears that Wharton was coming in for Nnadi. But Wharton was out there for more snaps, even though Nnadi was the starter.
Yeah, Colin Saunders said in the preseason, and it stuck with me, he's like, Turk and I talk all the time, and we want to make sure that when Reed and Nnadi leave the game, there is absolutely no drop-off. You shouldn't even notice we're out there. Right. And I think with that mentality, Wharton has pushed for more snaps and deserves them, and I think he should continue to get them. Making plays like this, I understand that it turned into a blowout. If this had been made in a close game, this would be a freaking game-changing play out of nowhere that would have juiced the team and perhaps propelled them to a victory, and the Chiefs need defensive players like that at this juncture.
Absolutely.
All right. We have made it through the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. We hope that you enjoyed it. Coming up on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, we'll have another Arrowhead Drive coming at you on Wednesday morning, followed by the Great British Chiefs Show, turning the page and getting their first deep look at the Tennessee Titans. Should be fun. Please leave us a rating and review if you like the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. For my deputy editor, the overall man, John Dixon, I'm Pete Sweeney. Thank you for joining us on another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.